This is the Energizing India Podcast.
Welcome to the Energizing India Podcast, a program that focuses on the electric mobility sector in India, giving a voice to this industry sector. My name is Ravin Merchandani, and on this program, previously, we have spoken to key decision makers and protagonists from the various sectors of the ecosystem of the electric mobility sector in India, including grid operators, car OEMs, vehicle OEMs such as two-wheelers and three-wheelers, charge point operators, and even battery manufacturers. Today, we have a very interesting program for you as we go back to the charge point operator sector and speak one of Europe's largest charge point operators, Fortum. We speak to none other than Avdesh Jha. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Avdesh, you've worked as Vice President of Hindustan Power Projects. You've worked with Dan's Energy. You were Deputy Director of the Central Water Commission. You did academic projects at the IIT Lucknow, have an MBA in finance, also from IIM Lucknow, a master's degree in hydraulics and water from the IIT Kanpur, and a BSc in civil engineering from the MIT of Muzaffarpur. For our listeners, I think we're very interested, how did someone with all of this end up at Fortum in India? What has been that career adventure? Because you've done everything.
So, Ravin, essentially, I am an energy professional. I started my journey with the Steel Authority of India Limited in 1991. But then, coming from a state like Bihar, we had always aspirations for, you know, the government job and the civil services. So I qualified for the Union Public Service examinations and I joined the Government of India in 1993. So I resigned Steel Authority and I came to the Government of India. Incidentally, I was given the responsibility of managing the water resources, particularly the hydropower dam. Mm-hmm. And that's how I began the journey as an energy professional. But incidentally, in 2003, the Electricity Act was enacted. So that opens the space for the private sector participation in energy generations. Before that, it was pure government's domain. So at that point of time, you know, I started thinking that so too much has been done on the policy side. What should be done on the execution side now? So that's how this, you know, kind of a Kira, you know, keep coming. And for 4 years, I spent with the government. But then in 2007, finally, I decided that I should quit. And then I should join the private organizations where the execution lies. Mm. That's how my stint with the Hindustan Power Projects, which is, was an offshoot of Mozambique. I started with the hydropower in there and I stayed there for almost 6 years. And I was also involved in the thermal power executions by way of, because every thermal power requires a barrage or a water resources, because that requires for thermal power cooling. So I was involved in the barrage constructions, being a hydropower engineer. And but then at that point of time, you know, the financial crisis happened across the globe, 2008 Lehman crisis. And that resulted into the Hindustan Power Project's priorities getting shifted from the development of the hard, you know, long gestation hydropower projects to the shorter on the thermal and the solar side. So I was thinking that now, is it the time to move for other venture? Incidentally, the Fortum had started their journey in India in 2012. And in 2013, they were looking for someone to head their hydro business, which they wanted to start in India. It took almost 6 to 9 months time before we decided mutually that fine. They found me suitable for leading their hydropower business. And I found that this is a company to work for. And that's how my journey started with the Fortum in 2014. 1st of July, and for last 8 years now, and within Fortum itself, my journey has been fascinating. I started with hydro, but because of the global issues, the company decided that we will not pursue. So finally, we decided that hydro we will put aside, and then we'll pursue the other projects. So I was given the responsibility of then managing the solar assets. So I worked there for 3 years, and parallelly, I was also responsible for establishing the sustainability business of Fortum, because being the European company, being the foreign, you know, the Finnish company, we focus a lot of things on the safety, the sustainability, the environmental aspects of that. So they wanted to someone to lead that one. So I was responsible for that one. But in 2017, we thought that India is a huge market as far as automobile is concerned. And since we had already done for 6 years, 7 years in Norway, setting up the EV charging infrastructure, we internally deliberated that, is there any potential for being into this business in India? And that's where I started my journey on the EV.
So you, the oldest company probably being a CPO in India, I'd hazard. So Fortum, as you said, is a Finnish company, a large Finnish utility, perhaps the largest energy company in Finland. You're doing many things across the world, but the largest CPO probably in Europe as well. Both Sunil and I, we go to Europe often. We've got the Fortum app. We've used your chargers across Europe. 2017, there were no CPOs in India. You were the first one. What was the what was that experience launching a CPO in India and having people look at you scratching their heads with DC001 and only the Mahindra E2O available in the market?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I take this as a, you know, when I started this, I took it as a challenge, you know, because coming from the government background, I knew that a lot of things has to be done before it becomes real a business for any enterprise to start with. So initially, we started with the market study itself, that how much is the potential? What is the policy backing this one? In 2015, in fact, the government has come out with some support for the framework for promoting the electric vehicle. And obviously, the hybrid was also part of that. But the for us, based on our experience, the largest problem was that what would be the status of the electricity? Because electricity by nature in India is a regulated business. Mm-hmm. You know, you require a license to deal with anything to do with the electricity. And the larger challenge for us was that, will it be regulated? Will it be licensed? And if that is so, that will be then just the, you know, beginning of the end of this industry itself. Because this business cannot be done with a licensed and with a regulated entity. At the same time, we were aware, coming from the government background, that yes, the government would be thinking more from the consumer point of view, and they believe that this should be regulated. So that's where we started, and we were alone at that point of time. And remember that, you know, the PSUs, they were coming quite big, because the government was trying that probably this is a non-viable business, so they should promote only the PSUs. So like NTPC, PGCIL, and others, they had started coming up at that point of time. Though in private sector, we were probably the first CPOs on the private side. And obviously then other peoples also started coming in. And in 2018, you know, the Ministry of Power came up with this one. So when we started as a company, we had this, that once we sort out this challenge, then India being the fourth largest car market, this would be huge, huge market to be in. And it's early, the better it is. That's how our thought process was, and that's how we started.
So that was 2017. You were on the ground in 2018. It was still a very nascent market, 2018. That's when we started looking at making DC fast chargers, for example. Today, 2022, 4 years after, it's completely different, right? In fact, I often tell the story. We were in the Warwick Manufacturing Group battery lab in the UK, which is right next to the Land Rover factory near Solihull. And we were taken to a secret room where we saw every Tata model in late 2018, every Tata car model being tested under lithium. And it was a big message to us, okay, that this market is upon us, because if Tata is doing this without having made any announcement, it's coming. It's coming in a big way. Now, we all know that the Nexon was launched. There was lots of problems with the Nexon in terms of it being an EV, which everyone's trying to address. But 2018, 2022, two very different pictures now. Has that evolution been pretty much as you estimated it would, or were you surprised at things along the way, if you look at where you were in 2018 to where you are today in 2022?
See, as an industry, I'm not surprised, because I was right from the day one, I was very clear, because at that point of time, when you, if I look back, people were talking about, should charging come first?
Exactly.
Or should cars should come first? Yes. You know, the chicken and egg. I was very clear. And we were rather, our company was very clear that the charging infrastructure has to proceed.
Build it and they will come.
Yes. Because charging infrastructure is like, you know, the internet.
Absolutely.
Unless the internet is there, you can't think of email, or you can't think of the www, you know. So you need to have this infrastructure. Yes, there has to be certain lag. So it can go for some years, and then the OEM has to reciprocate in terms of bringing the products, because you can't keep on building the infrastructure and waiting for, you know, the cars to come in. So we were very clear that infrastructure has to come first. And that's why we were very clear that the infrastructure players would start coming in. And the startups would also pitch in a lot, strongly on that. So I'm not surprised from that point of view, the way it has evolved. Where I'm surprised is the entry of the established players, the big giants, coming in so early. Because I was expecting that probably they would come sometime later when the industry would be slightly matured, you know, the customer will be more fully aware at that point of time. That is the only element which has surprised me. Otherwise, it's pretty good on the predicted path, I would say.
So there's two questions that has spurred. The first is the business of charging, the whole infrastructure sector, was actually spurred by government tenders. And a lot of them were too big, and therefore they failed. And they were badly written, and they were skewed in favor of certain companies. But we've seen multiple failures of these tenders, and yet these tenders came out, no matter which company you looked at, whether it was CESL, NTPC, or, you know, BSES, BST, all of these government-backed tenders. That hasn't really stimulated the market in the way the government anticipated. In fact, the stimulation has come from companies such as yourselves and the startups who've set up, irrespective of size, gone ahead and done it, you know, build it and they will come. So do you see that as now going by the wayside, or do you still see that there will be a large PSU play eventually with a questionable reliability, and then there's a significant private sector play which is focused on reliability, and therefore customers will come there and there might be a premium? Where do you see this evolution?
I have been consistently believing that the private sector has an important role to play in this infrastructure business. There are two reasons for that. One, globally, when I studied, I found that the distribution company was trying to take lead globally, but the regulators were not allowing them in the initial years to take the lead, for a simple reason, because once a distribution company takes the lead, means that whatever investments you make, essentially then you are socializing over the large band of the new, you know, not non-EV users.
That's right.
And that's where they had pushed them, right, for 4 years, initial 4 years, 5 years globally. Second, if I come to the Indian context, I was strongly believing that the Honorable Prime Minister is pushing that the government has no role to be into the business. Mm. Why in the infrastructure business, the government should come in? So that's where I was of the view that the private sector has to play an important role. That was very clear. However, whether the government tenders and the government will continue to play this or not, see, I still believe the government or the regulators probably believe that, you know, it is initially not viable, you know, it's not giving good returns for initial 3-4 years. And that's where we should pitch in. We have the bandwidth, we have the cash, and we can probably help build this one. But this business has to be seen from a different perspective. It is not the business of just creating a physical infrastructure. This is a business of serving the end customer. And unless any agency, be it the government or the private, has the right mindset of addressing the concerns of the consumer 24/7. So this is the business which is more for those people who has the good consumer mindset, a positive consumer mindset, who has the interest in creating an awareness to build the future potential partners, but not for just creating infrastructure. And that's where I believe that any large utility company or established utility company, be it the PSUs or be it the private, those who have been working in a kind of a monopolistic environment, they will have a challenge.
Yes.
Because the customer will get stuck at 1 a.m. in the night and they would call your customer care executives. Now you should be in the time mind frame at fine at 1 a.m. I will get up from my bed, I will solve the customer's problem. There you can't say that fine, wait for, you know, tomorrow 9 a.m. when my office starts. So this is what I've seen, you know, any company, be it the PSUs or the private, if they understand this, they can be successful in this business.
So the second part of that question then is focusing on the private sector. If you look at India, the way the CPO sector has evolved, you have, as you said, you know, we're all quite surprised that the big boys came so early. But you also have this immense amount of vibrant activity from startups, you know, whether you look at ChargeZone or ChargeGrid, Xeon, Relux, you know, wonderful ChargeMod, wonderful startups, GoEC, who have created a big difference in the market, who in many ways are supporting your journey as well. And when you look at what's happening in Europe, you have a lot of startups that were successful, and then you have the entrenched big businesses, but not in an oligarchy kind of way. And the worry in India is everything moves towards an oligarchy in the end, three or four companies own everything. So, you know, you've had these big companies now enter, you have the, you know, Adanis, Ambanis enter the sector. And you have on the other end of the spectrum, all this vibrancy of growth. If I were to request you to put your mind to 1,000 days from today, 3 years from today, and forecast from all of your experience how this sector will evolve, are you going to see the vibrancy still exist? Or are you going to see many of these startups gobbled up by the big boys, and it becomes a 2 or 2.5 player market eventually in India?
See, there are two aspects to this business. One is purely on the infrastructure side itself. Second is on the end consumer side itself. Now, as far as end consumer is concerned, when I'm talking of the mobile applications, aggregates thing and all those things, that is something which probably would be kind of 2 or 3 large players. You know, because that's purely on the consumer side, it's a soft side. It doesn't require a larger investments on the infrastructure. So there you can see 2-3 players being as dominant. The dominant.
Like in telecom.
Like in telecom, or similarly like in Europe, if you see. But on the infrastructure side, I don't see, you know, this is getting in the hand of 2 or 3 players. There are two reasons for that. One, India is hugely different than the Europe. You have to cater to the deep rural countrysides as well as to the urban and the highways. When the EV become the mainstream, then every nook and corner of the country has to be serviced with infrastructure. And I don't think it is feasible for any giant to set up the physical infrastructure in all nook and corner of the country. So there, I think there is a huge space for many, many players to be there. Someone will have a larger presence in few geographies. Someone will have lesser presence, or someone will not prefer to be on that presence. But the good part is that since the Ministry of Power has said that this is a de-licensed activities, this has opened the avenue for individual householders also to set up the charging infrastructure. So they will also be setting up the infrastructure. They might have only one station. They might have only two stations. And those would get reflected on those software or the mobile applications, which will be dominated by 2 or 3 players, I would say. Right? That's how I look at it. So it's a two different business. A physical infrastructure separate, and consumer-facing applications.
It's an excellent answer, actually, Adesh. It's the first time we've seen that clarity. One of the things you've said is, in the end, this is about a business that is serving the end customer, and that comes down to reliability and resilience. My stunning discovery has been, even when I travel through Scandinavia, where you've got the largest amount of penetration of EVs, almost 40 to 50% of fast chargers are unavailable, out of service, for various reasons, because you need so many ecosystems to come together. You need the mobile system to work, the power system to work, the power electronics to work, so many other things to work, climate. And here in India, you know, that will be an immense challenge. And one of the problems we see in India is, in India, it's a 0-1 game. It's all L1. And L1 will always be China, because China can make in a day what we make in a year, right? And so they'll always have economies of scale. So there's a natural imbalance in fairness of India versus China. Yet, you know, I'm not China bashing, that's the reality. A lot of the stuff that comes from there doesn't work very long. And when you're in the back of beyond in Rajasthan or in Bihar, and you've got a charger and you've approached it to the state of charge of 10% and it's an unavailable service, there's going to be issues. How do you see this evolving? How's Fortum, for example, addressing reliability and resilience in its charging network across India, given that you will have a very big cost imbalance then? If you are moving for resilience, you have a high cost of infrastructure versus your competition.
Yeah, so see, for us, the reliability is critical, because this is how then you will ensure a good customer experience, right? And that is our motto. You know, we have to enhance the customer's experience. Because this is purely do-it-yourself model. You know, you are not pampering the customer with any, you know, assisted service like you have on the fuel stations. So obviously the charger, a good quality charger, reliability becomes very, very important. And as far as we are concerned, you know, you can understand from the fact that when we set up the India's first network of the 50 kilowatt public charging with the 10 chargers in 5 cities, we imported it from Australia. The reason being because we had tested those chargers over a period of 10 years and we found that this is a fantastic chargers and we should give similar experience, you know, we should enhance the reliability of the chargers. So we are not willing to compromise on the quality side because you can't afford to alienate your customers repeatedly coming to your charger and finding your chargers offline or
out of service.
Yeah. For initial couple of years, customer will give you the benefit of doubt because the ecosystem is emerging. But after that, the chargers has to remain online almost all the time.
Yes,
and that's where you have to zero in on to those partners, those manufacturers who commit for changing, even if they might have started with the, you know, you said the Chinese product, though I strongly do not believe that all Chinese products are made in China is necessarily poor because we are using the mobile, the laptop, everything made in China. It depends upon what specifications you want, what quality you want to serve to the customers, wherever you can source from any country, as long as you are committed to that specifications, you are focused to that quality, you can find the ways. But that would be something which will be needed definitely.
Avdesh, I want to come to another contentious subject, and I think the bugbear for all of the CPOs in India is the Nexon users group, because there's so much education that has to come, as you said yourself. It's a nascent industry and we have to help a lot of people understand whether the problem is the charger or the car or something else completely unrelated. The issue of education is a big issue. How has Fortum addressed this? Because it's a problem for everybody, right? It's not just Nexon. I mean, I'm being frivolous in saying Nexon, but every car club, you know, the Kia has its own and MG has its own. They have the user groups that are helping each other. But as you learn, today it's always the CPO's fault or the charger's fault when there's a myriad of other things that impact the reliability, the resilience and the availability of the charger. So how's Fortum addressing that?
Yeah, so see, we understand from the very beginning that we being the interface between the car and the consumer, so we have to accept a lot of, I would say, grievances of the consumer. Even if it is pertaining to the vehicle, but it will be us, you know, as a charge point operator, any charge point operator, because consumer is facing this issue at the charging stations.
Perception
they see that,
is the reality.
You know, that it is slowing or it is not doing the fast enough and all those things. Though generally people understand, if they understand the battery chemistry or if the OEMs give them a proper education about that one, they would know that it is the battery or the BMS which controls that at what voltage, how much current I can accept, right? Without being unstable. Now the charger, what charger has a role to play there? They have to just communicate with the BMS and the BMS says, fine, you send me this much of power. The chargers supply that much of power safely. That's the only objective of or the function of the charger. But the consumer's experience is regarding that while my vehicle is getting charged, this is slow charging, this is fast charging, this is not as per, you know, we were expecting. So obviously we should be aware of this fact, right? And this happens everywhere. You know, when you, in the normal consumer industry, when you talk to the customer executives, right, other operators, it's their network, which is at fault probably, but who faces the fury of yours? The person with whom you are talking to, because he or she is the interface. Similarly, the charge point operator is the interface and they will have to accept this, that the customer will ultimately vent their anger on them. But we believe that the ultimately customer has to understand about the battery. But on the charger side, we know that because we have to interact with the OEM, we understand. So that's where we have undertaken this thing. through the social media we are trying to do. We have the customer day. You know, we organize customer day in different cities where we invite the people or the customers, help them how to charge it, because it's a DIY model. You know, you have to connect yourself. So what are the challenges you might face? How do you address those challenges? Recently, we have created one video because we face that a lot of people are facing these gun locking issues. Now, recently, we are facing the issues of the emergency button getting pushed on the charger for taking out the guns. Now, ideally, that should not be. And if you push the emergency button, then as a good EV user, you should again release it once your gun is unlocked. Because then you are making this charger available for your fellow next EV user. Otherwise, the emergency button pushed, charger goes offline, new person comes in, you know, they face the inconvenience. So we have taken these kind of things through the emails, through the social media. But I think all the stakeholders,
as an industry, we probably have to come together.
OEM, you know, the charger OEM, the car OEM, and the CPOs have to come together and create this awareness.
Absolutely right. So I'm conscious you're a busy man, Avdesh. We won't keep you that long. I want to ask you the final question. We ask this question to everybody who comes, all the talent that comes on our podcast. And I apologize, it's a frivolous question, but it always brings a beautiful clarity in the response. And therefore, I'll ask you the question. And the question is this. If you had the opportunity to be the Prime Minister of India for one day and you could make any decision you wanted to foster faster adoption of electric mobility in India, what would that decision be?
Yeah, I think that reminds me the childhood when you were asked to write an essay that if you were the Prime Minister, what would you do? Yeah, see, I think I mean, in terms of the coming from the Prime Ministers, I would talk about purely on that the government should invest more on the making educations about the EV mandatory. Government should undertake these responsibilities. The rest everything will fall in place because government has already done a lot of things, you know, by lowering the GST, by giving you the income tax bracket, you know, the break in the interest. You have the FAME II on the demand side. But what is needed is that the end user, or the I would say even beyond that one, the prospective users, like who are studying in the class 8, who are in the college, because ultimately they are the decision maker of whether what car we should buy. In the family, if you go today, it's not the parents who decides finally, it's the children who decide that should it be sedan, should it be SUV, what type of car. So if I were the Prime Minister, I would take the awareness about the EV to this level where it becomes much more convincing for them, knowing the pros and cons of using the EV and then taking an informed decisions. That is something which I would do.
Excellent answer, Avdesh. It's been a fantastic discussion. Lots of gyan, lots of experience, lots of knowledge here. Thank you so very much for having made the time to be with us on the Energizing India podcast.
Thank you, Ravin.
I'm your host for this episode, Ravin Mirchandani. But I would not be here without the amazing Energizing India podcast team. Onkar, our podcast director and the man who makes it all happen in the end, much like a big, fat, grand Indian wedding, bringing together the research, data and attention to details, all in the timelines to get the next episode out on time. Sri Vikram, our podcast co-host and head of research, and Sunil, who along with me is executive producer of our program. The Energizing India podcast is an Ador Digitron production, giving a voice to the EV industry in India. If you enjoyed listening to us today, make sure to follow us on whatever platform you are listening on, whether it's Spotify, Apple iTunes, or our own portal, energizingindia.tv. Thank you very much, and see you on the next episode.